This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And as we ease into the weekend, we always make sure we bring you an open conversation every Friday at 11 a.m. I can't breathe because that jingle just gets me so excited and worked up. You almost feel like you're dancing off your seat here in studio. Okay, today's open conversation is an important and interesting one. We take it to the region and stop focusing inwardly into our country. So we will be spending some time with Buimo Sekgoma, who is the Secretary General of the Southern African Development Community Parliamentary Forum, that is SADC. Did you even know that the Parliamentary Forum exists? If you did know, do you know what it is about? Well, we are going to find out just what it does and how it works and their role in the region. And of course, the forum, the Parliamentary Forum, is headquartered in Windhoek in Namibia. Let me welcome my guest, Secretary General of SADC Parliamentary Forum, Buimo Sekgoma. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning and thank you for having me, and good morning, listeners.
Thank you for making the time. Perhaps the first question to ask is really, what is this animal called SADC Parliamentary Forum, and why is it important to us citizens in the region?
Thank you very much for that question. Let me simply say, the SADC Parliamentary Forum is the voice of Parliament.
Mm.
This is a consultative body, as it was resolved when it was formed in 1996 by the SADC Summit of Head of State in Blantyre, Malawi. It brings together members of Parliament from all the SADC countries, currently with the exception of the Comoros. Mm. And we have the leadership of the SADC Parliamentary Forum being led by the honorable speakers of national parliaments and an additional 6 members of parliament from both the ruling and the opposition parties. So that is the SADC Parliamentary Forum. It is the voice of parliament.
Mm.
It is supposed to be, through that representative role, by extension, the seat for the citizens of SADC.
Now, you talk about how the heads of state were instrumental in setting up this body back in 1996. How do you say your relationship is like with the heads of state now? Do they come back to the forum and consult? Do they take the views of the forum seriously enough in the work of SADC as a whole across all the different organs that are available within the SADC structure?
Let me say, definitely, every government would take its parliament seriously. And by extension, there's no way that the heads of state would establish an organ that they do not believe in or that they do not take seriously.
Mm.
And there's no way that the speakers of parliament would leave their countries or make subscriptions to this forum or even spend their resources in sending representation through the members represented in parliament without the buy-in or support of the heads of state. And one thing that one needs to pay attention to, and I think it's important also to our listeners, is the whole issue of separation of powers. We will not be having tea every day with the heads of state, even at national level. It doesn't happen every day that the speaker is always sitting in the presidency, because that is the nature of the relationship. We complement each other, we hold each other accountable. Our views are important because they represent the views of the citizens, and therefore this is how we work together.
Now, in some instances, in contexts where we talk about countries, the relationship between the executive and the legislature, it seems a bit more clear where the connections and the interface is. How do you interface with the heads of state, you know, coming from so many different countries that are represented in your parliament and in SADC as a whole? How do you interface and create standing commitments, for conversation, for making sure that you hold them to account?
Well, holding to account, that's a strong word. at the visa level.
And I do want us to explore it once you've given me my response, because at times this is exactly what is attacked as a point of weakness at times of the regional bodies that we have, because people tend to say, do you even have the powers to hold anybody accountable?
Yes. No, I hear you and I understand that in context, but let me just say, because we are a regional organization, there's no country at regional level.
Mm.
But the relationship that we have with the organs of the state through this consultative body are such that, like I said, we have our representatives that I've already indicated to you. And through them, the resolutions of the SADC Parliamentary Forum are transmitted to the national level through the parliament and somehow disseminated to the various organs.
Yes.
We don't deal with heads of state. That is the mandate of the SADC Secretariat based in Gaborone, which is dealing with the executive, the ministers, and the heads of state. But our relationship is in so far as creating linkages to discuss issues of national and regional concerns. And that is normally done through portfolio committees, which then transmit these resolutions through the structures of parliament. However, when we have our plenary assembly sessions, it is in our rules that each assembly, which meets twice a year, which is the highest policy-making body, should be graced by the head of state at the opening ceremony.
Of the country where the plenary is taking place, that would be?
Of the country where the plenary is taking place.
I mean, this is interesting because it's important to create this understanding. As you would know, a lot happens in the region and we wonder who is actually the voice of the people. You'll know, for example, now what is happening in northern Mozambique has gotten a lot of people talking, almost saying that the instruments of SADC don't seem to be working easily to try and resolve issues that affect the region. How would you take through someone listening who says, oh, there's a parliamentary forum, how does it handle certain questions such as that, what is happening in Mozambique?
Well, I think it's not a simple response that one can give.
Yeah.
But I think we need to understand the whole animal around sovereignty. Or simply put, the protection that each country accords itself or needs to be accorded to run its affairs without interference.
Mm.
So that principle of sovereignty can only allow you to persuade, to cajole, and to engage diplomatically on issues as permitted by the level of engagement that each country has with each other. At the regional level, we can look at making pronouncements of saying what we see in Mozambique should not be happening.
Yeah.
And it should be condemned because it goes against ABCD principles.
Mm.
And statements can be issued, engagements or messages can be sent through diplomatic channels. But there's no way that one country can just walk into anybody else's territory and say, this is how things should be done. I think this is what should be understood as a principle.
Mm, mm.
And therefore, sometimes the bluntness, it is because a lot of things are happening behind closed doors that people are not aware of.
Mm.
And of course, the impatience around people dying every day, the numbers of displacements going to over 900,000, and the graphic pictures that we see cause for such frustration from the citizenry. And I can tell you that there's never a time where there's silence.
Mm.
There's always work happening behind, and I'm sure you have seen the pronouncements that were made by the Double Troika recently, where now we are being told that they're moving in to create peace and security for the people of Mozambique.
Yeah, the backbone of any parliament is really to be a representative of the people, and chief on its task should be some level of engagement with those people through various forms of public participation. How do you say you conduct this exercise as a forum, or you remain interparliamentary high level, and then it is for the individual parliaments in the various countries to actually conduct these public participation processes?
Well, we have a well-endowed committee system at the SADC Parliamentary Forum, which allows for expert hearings. Sometimes a matter appears very simple, but it may require that members of parliament create that knowledge base that allows them to engage and interrogate issues. So they'll create an opportunity, maybe through capacity development or engagement, or call in experts to come and tell them this is precisely what is happening on this matter, this is the data, and these are the pathways and the shocks that seem to be happening, and where we believe, given your mandate of legislating or whether passing budget or representing the people or oversight, these are the avenues that you have. We also have opportunities where our committees actually deliberate on a particular issue. It could be a certain resolution that has already been passed at the level of the African Union or the AU or SADC, and integrate a particular issue of regional concern by then ensuring that the committee dissects this matter, the committee comes up with resolutions and transmits them to the appropriate forum. Normally in our structures, the committee will deliberate then recommend to the plenary assembly. Our plenary assembly is what we refer to as the highest policy-making body, which is like an AGM, where everybody sits, hears the matter, deliberates and resolves in terms of how this matter can be processed. And as indicated, we then package our resolutions, send them back to parliaments, who would then direct them to the relevant ministries or the relevant authorities in that country. So this is how it happens. Our committees are open to the public, just like they are to parliament. Our representatives are accessible, and all the time we can receive any written or you know, any written concern from the people and directions in terms of where they need to look at oversights. And some of this information that we get, we package into frameworks, depending on how much moss we have gathered or what we believe that there's an established issue here and there's need to really come up with guidelines that can influence more than one country. Maybe let's say that can be looked at by all the 16 countries. And we come up with normative frameworks that we refer to as model laws or soft law. Sometimes we come up with guidelines. Sometimes we come up with what we refer to as standards. And we put that together, and we believe that these are disseminated through countries. Committees continue to follow up and see what is happening in those areas, and it is shared.
Let me let you finish that point.
With the civil society organizations, it's also shared with our governments and many other ministries or relevant stakeholders.
If you were to think back on some of the work that the Parliamentary Forum has done over the years, what would be the one flagship point of success that you can refer us to and say, on this one, the resolutions were taken, guidelines or model laws were set, and really through dissemination to various countries, we have made some inroads on a particular issue?
There are many. I don't know which one, which area you'd like for me to.
No, I mean after news headlines, I do want us to go to, I do want us to go to some of the work that was done, because I know you have been having a multi committees meeting over the past week. I want us to delve into questions around infrastructure, investment, and trade. But I just want you to give us a sense of really one that stands out for you, maybe not in that space, but the one that stands out for you, and you say, well, countries really did heed the call from the forum. and this is what they did with it?
Okay, I'll choose one that is not, I believe it's not an issue that will make us sit here the whole day and dissect it. But, you know, we have a flagship program on election observation in most of our countries. Mm. And the forum has observed over 30 elections in the SADC region. They've made recommendations. They've engaged with organs of the state in those countries. They've engaged with civil society.
Mm.
They've engaged with political party organizations. And we have seen, and we can, without, you know, even doubting ourselves, indicate that this success is owed to some of what the forum contributed to with other electoral observers.
Mm.
And we've seen progress, we've seen changes. From as simple as having a transparent ballot box, those are some of the issues that the forum was talking about at that time, to a simple issue of allowing, you know, counting to be happening where the voting is happening in some countries. Those are some of the successes, and many more that I could name.
Yeah.
We've also gone further, if I can give you an example, with our HIV/AIDS model law. We were very strong on issues of non-discrimination.
Mm.
We're very strong on issues of ensuring that there's universal treatment for all who are positive.
Mm.
And we saw a lot of changes in our countries where policies were developed, committees of parliaments were established to tackle the issue of HIV and AIDS. And as you know, we had most of our countries even, you know, looking at issues of TRIPS flexibilities to ensure that medication is also afforded to everybody else, including those who do not have the resources,
mm.
and many other more. We have the model law on eradicating child marriages. We can show you results around the changes in legislative landscape around countries ensuring that they look at the child marriage registration, where it was very difficult to determine whether a child is 18, you know, because there was no birth registration. We've also had situations where some marriages have been nullified by bylaws, where the definition of a child has been put into context, looking at the best interest of the child, and many more. So we can say that we have influenced the domestication of various international protocols and treaties and instruments. And these are topics or issues that are of mutual interest to the citizens of the SADC region, to countries. They align very closely to the Africa Agenda 2063 and many others. And therefore, it is not that the forum looks at isolated cases which are not, you know, impacting on sustainable development goals, on targets that are set for eradication of whether TB, malaria, HIV, among others. And within that, we see ourselves operating within a globalized world where parliaments need to build a common momentum for their countries and act as drivers of change in development. So we really believe that our impact has been nurturing the bonds of solidarity.
Let us just hold that thought. I'll go to the stores and come back quickly to get a sense of how you got to be Secretary General, the first ever woman to become Secretary General for the forum.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbini. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
And of course, you can tweet me at Lukhona Mbini, hashtag Power Talk. Secretary General, do I have you back on the line?
Yes, you have me right here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, first ever woman Secretary General of the SADC Parliamentary Forum since August 2019. Can you give us a sense of what your journey was like, probably to being a public representative and ending up being Secretary General?
Oh. I've worked for the SADC PF, let me say, from 2005.
Yeah.
And I've seen the organization grow in its diversity. I have been submerged in its challenges and its successes over time. And when the time came for applications to to be, you know, thrown in for the position of the Secretary General, I threw mine in. And I went through a rigorous process. In fact, I don't know. I went through a rigorous process. I wanted to say how many people were interviewed.
Yes.
But I must just basically say to you that this is a process that was based on merit.
Yeah.
And I believe that that is how I became the Secretary General of the Federal Parliamentary Forum. The fact that it became a woman, I guess that was just part of, you know, validating and realizing that women can also do it.
I mean, at times we see a lot of lobbying for these kind of assignments. Would you say there was a bit of lobbying from your country of origin by any chance?
Not at all. In fact, for the SADC Parliamentary Forum, we don't have the same system where there's negotiation and lobbying. What actually happens is that it becomes very clear at the beginning that these are the countries that are eligible for the position. So if your country has had an opportunity, it is exempted. And that is the only, you know, exception that is given. So what basically happens is that each country is written and they are told to look for a candidate that they would like to, you know, encourage to get into the race. And each country, I'll just give you the example of Botswana. Botswana flagged the advertisement in the papers. They put together a panel, a competency-based assessment was done, and they then, out of that selection, put forward my name. So what could have actually happened is that I could have even lost it at the national level. But, you know, the rest is history.
The rest is history. And now we are in conversation with you. Please just stand by for me because I do want us to look at the work you've been doing this past week with the committees. But I have Thomas White here and he's ready with news headlines.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mnguni. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
Well, indeed, now we are talking. It is 27 minutes to 12 this morning here on Power Talk. And my guest on this open conversation is the Secretary General for the SADC Parliamentary Forum, Buemo Sekgoma, here with me. To be part of this conversation, as you have been listening in, please do dial on 0861-987-000. You might have a question or a comment to put to her as you attempt, as I am doing, to understand the workings of the SADC Parliamentary Forum and its importance to us as citizens of the region. Secretary General, one of the statements that really caught my eye over the past week was that of the Standing Committee on Trade, Industry, Finance and Investment, which is important in its work because questions of investment, questions of trade are at the heartbeat of making sure that the economy in the region is functioning well and that there are jobs, especially for young people. And there's an idea that was explored in that particular statement, the idea of a one-stop border post. This one-stop border post being a model that was birthed around the year 2000. However, it seems as if it has not been implemented successfully in the region. I see that I've just lost my guest quickly there. Let's try and reconnect with her there in Windhoek, Namibia. Hopefully she will be back on the line with us and we can explore now some of the work that has been done by standing committees of the SADC Parliamentary Forum. As she has said, those are very important committees because they then take some of their work to plenaries, and once resolutions are indeed adopted at plenary, then they are disseminated to various countries. Let me just see if I have my guest back. Secretary General, are you back with me?
I'm back with you. Somehow I got
things of technology. We are always really with one eye closed, one eye open, hoping for the best. That especially when we have to speak for so long, that things will go as smoothly as possible. I was just raising the issue of the one-stop border post emanating from that meeting of the Standing Committee on Trade, Industry, Finance, and Investment, which I thought is very important. And it said, you know, this was birthed around year 2000, but it's quite clear that it's being revisited now simply because we have not made enough progress in ensuring the success of this one-stop border post. Just please take us through the vision behind this initiative of one-stop border post, because a lot of people in the logistics who do a lot of cross-border, ferrying of goods tend to have lots of complaints as to how they are treated through border posts in the region.
No, indeed. This is a very important topic. And I must say that the committee has been concerned largely about this issue over time, simply because, you know, our borders are quite fluid. And secondly, the effectiveness of how transit of goods and people at the border post happens has a huge impact in terms of our traders. So the committee decided to really look at how is it that they can really put their, you know, heads together and influence the whole issue around how we can enhance the regional economic integration through infrastructure development of the one-stop border post. Mm. And they looked at two cases which are really which were shared by COMESA and the ZRA, the Zambia Revenue Authority, yes, and the ZIMRA. So they were very clear, and I think even as they engaged, they knew that now with COVID-19, we have really been stripped of any effectiveness as countries to deal with the problems that we always had at the border, and that they must look at how digital transformation can be used to enhance e-commerce. Mm. And this is one of the issues that they're going to take forward and ensure that we come up with one model that can be used in Southern Africa and that cannot be in any way overlooked by one country over the other. They also found and acknowledged the fact that infrastructure development with regards to trade in the SADC region needs to be augmented. And now that with the commencement of trade under the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, which started in January 2021, they believe this has opened up trade in the SADC region to other parts of the African continent. And we must harmonize our trade procedures through this one-stop border post. And this they could not overemphasize. They also underscored the role played by resources in insurgency. You know the issue of the northern province of Mozambique, that there are issues of insurgency being linked to the national resources because it's a rich region in that area. And they are worried that this is going to block access and close trade routes to other resources in the region. And this matter must be addressed very quickly. So that is those are the issues that prompted the committee to focus in and say these issues, we must ensure that these are taken forward to the relevant ministries and that these are acted on at national level. How is that going to happen? Members of parliament in those countries will then move motions or ask questions of oversight to trigger and catalyze responses from ministers, get progress and see what could be happening. There was also another concern that they expressed broadly, which is the high level of corruption at these borders. And they did indicate that this really involves a number of actors, such as customs officials, immigration officers, border guards, among others, with you know who have different levels of discretionary powers and opportunities to extract bribes. And this, the committee said, no, the SADC government should seriously address this vice of corruption, which will contribute to the cost of border trade in the region. There are many other resolutions that they came up with, And I think for now, let me stop there to allow you to follow up. But the misalignment of ICT infrastructure was really highlighted because they said this will limit access to trade in the region and it cannot be left alone. So we must take an opportunity because of COVID and see what can happen.
No, absolutely. And I thought it important to give you the opportunity to explain this quite at length. I do have Tabo on 0861-987-000. Perhaps before I follow up, let me give him a chance to put his question or statement to you, and then we continue this conversation on infrastructure, which has been an important one in the region. Tabo, good morning.
Morning, Lukona, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
And your guest. Lukona, in the 1970s, USA had about 218 million plus population. Recently now, they have about 300 million. So is China. So my question is that, what's the role of SADC concerning African children? When we have trillions and trillions of dollars of mineral sources leaving Africa and then feeding the overseas countries while children's African children are dying of hunger. So what's really SADC doing about that to safeguard, you know, the minerals that God has given us in order to have, you know, exactly what we want in terms of hunger and of all those kind of things. So we have SADC that is just sitting and folding its arms while children of Africa are dying every single day. And then in South Africa, we only have about 50 million plus South African children, but they cannot even take care of them.
Okay, Tabo. I hear you very well, loud and clear. I mean, Secretary General, this touches to the question around some level of legislation creation that is uniform in terms of how when minerals, there was exploration and there's confirmation that there are mineral resources, how do you then legislate for the exploitation of those mineral resources, ensuring that greatest value accrues to those countries and, of course, at large, the region? Is there work that is being done by the Parliamentary Forum on the question of resources? There's been a lot of stuff done, high-level panels being appointed of eminent persons on questions of resources and various other studies. But as the Parliamentary Forum, is the work that you've done, are there certain model laws that you have probably resolved around and disseminated to member states?
Yes, thank you very much for that question, Tabo. I would just like to affirm that data does indicate that there's urgency in dealing with the issue of hunger. In our countries, looking at, you know, policies that can begin to make a change in terms of the status quo currently. But in terms of the SADC Parliamentary Forum and its operations, I can assure you that the standing committees that I spoke to earlier and other organs will assist countries move towards their vision by discussing some of those issues in detail and from all sides. The beauty about the forum is that we don't only have members from the ruling party, we have also members from the opposition party.
Yes.
And that is the strength of how our committees function and how we contribute effectively to discussions from both sides. We promote such deliberations on such issues of mutual concern. We also provide an opportunity for best practices in terms of what has happened elsewhere, whether it's Asia, Europe, or even within Africa, and what is it that our parliaments can begin to learn from. And that is why we develop normative frameworks to say, if this area is an area of concern in our regional integration drive, perhaps we could look at this model and that model. The rest is left to countries, but at the regional level, these issues are discussed, and we believe that progress has been made, although limited, and these continue to be issues that parliaments should interrogate and discuss and come up with options of what can be done to ensure that this transformation or the picture changes and there's improvement when necessary.
I mean, certainly anyone listening, being a citizen of the region, can be thinking, well, there are issues that perhaps we can pressure through advocacy and other forms of work in the civil society space, our own parliaments, to make sure they put certain matters on the agenda front and center of the legislature. And they're asking these questions, as you said, asking the executive important questions of accountability. When we talk about the infrastructure integration approach to improve the sense of trade in the region, what would you say is important for us as citizens in our own countries to be pressuring our governments to commit to or to execute? I know NEPAD had at some point as well a high-level panel on infrastructure integration issues in the region and broadly in the continent, but very little seems to move beyond these high-level approaches. What are, to your mind, the urgent issues that must be addressed at an infrastructure level to see this trade and economic growth in the region?
The urgent issues, if you are listening in and listen to the presentations that the committee also received from COMESA and the association of, there appears to be a gap around funding. It appears the ideas are there. The plans have been put on hold, but there seems to be a problem around implementation, because these are shared borders. These require agreements to be signed between more than one country, and there's no shortage of ideas in terms of what should be done, as I've already indicated. Yes. But the outlay of when this should be done, how much money is required, and at what point should we expect certain things to be done, appears to be still under discussion. And I believe that with the discussions that we've had and the associations that are active, which involve civil society, our governments would have no choice but to move on some of these things. We have seen the buildings were dilapidated. They were not built for such a transition. We have also seen that automation of certain procedures was not shared, and therefore issue of standards was another issue that they brought up. So we need to really look at creation of modern infrastructure. We need to also make sure that even as we want to do that, we do have the resources to move in that direction. So there are so many issues, but I believe that if we look at the whole issue of certification, quality, at our ports, warehousing and packaging, making sure that this quick clearance of the truckers, who they say some of them spend longer time there, because it is not just one department that is dealing with one particular trucker. Those are issues that could be looked at and dealt with.
Now, I'm in conversation, if you're listening in, with the Secretary General of SADC's Parliamentary Forum, Buemo Sekgoma, and we are just discussing all things really about the SADC region and some of the work that was done this week by various committees. That line is 0861-987-000. Here on Power Talk, it is 11 minutes to 12, so I have to pay the bills a little and continue with this conversation.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mguni, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
You can tweet me at Lukhona Mguni, hashtag Power Talk, as we continue to wrap this conversation on all issues around the SADC Parliamentary Forum's work. Secretary General, one of the issues that kept being at the top of mind for some people is the whole idea around uni visas for the SADC region, where at least people, particularly tourists, would be able to travel across SADC on one visa, even though we might not be a formalized bloc as the EU might be. But the thinking around this uni visa is It's something that the Parliamentary Forum has been following up on to check how far we are and advising, really, those who are tasked with implementation to ensure that we finally realize this univisa. Okay. I don't know if I've lost my guest. Is my guest there? Okay. Probably some network issue. Send it to the back there to Banyana Internet Temba to try and see if we can re-establish connection. Apologies indeed if you find it a little irritating if we keep losing connection. We are connecting with Secretary General of the SEDEX Parliamentary Forum all the way in Windhoek, Namibia this morning, just having that open conversation. What are some of the things, though, that are a bite for you when we talk about this regional integration for trade and economy and development? That line is 0861 987 000. I think my guest is back on the line. Secretary General, I was just asking a question around the issue of the uni visa that would make traveling within the region much easier in promotion of economic development, tourism, and other various forms of trading, particularly in services, making life much easier for those who have to transit. Is this something that the Parliamentary Forum is looking into and advising those who should be implementing to move a bit more swiftly?
I would not really answer for the SADC secretaries because they're the ones who are seized with this. That's the executive and the relevant ministers in that regard. But I can indicate that the issue of the uni visa has been mooted for a long time, and this is becoming much more urgent. And one can also go back to say that, you know, the issue of the uni visa is linked to some of the goals that have been set by the executive in terms of the proposed operational model for how goods and people should be able to move swiftly. It is under consideration. It is also really linked closely to the whole issue of regional integration, the potential of the direct investment and enhanced potential for the region. So I don't believe there's a long way to go to move in this direction.
Yeah.
However, I'm not seized with issues of timelines in terms of when this would happen. I know that it would have to, you know, involve other countries to agree on this and for the free flow of goods across borders and for the people as well. So I'm not sure what the barriers are currently.
I mean, you touch on the ministries that are seized with this matter. Which are the key ministries you'd say are attending to this issue in case somebody is thinking, oh, well, I do want to put pressure on the ministry that is concerned with this issue?
I believe that at this point you could look at your ministries of trade and investment. I don't know what they are called. There are different names in different countries.
Yes.
I think the ministries of justice will be very, very critical because there will be legal issues involved in this particular issue. I also believe that the ministries of, what are they called nowadays, of foreign affairs, they used to be called, now they're called international cooperation, will be quite relevant. And ministers of customs will be important because you are looking at a situation here where the region promised itself at one point that we're going to have a customs union.
Yes.
Then we're going to have a common market and a common monetary area. And ultimately a common currency. And in those discussions, there was clarity in terms of the complete integration that would apply and that they didn't want any restrictions on capital flows and that they also are clear that this integrated zone, when they look into it, is going to further be visa-free with a liberalized airline connectivity and initiatives to jointly to join the markets of the region as a single destination of choice. So if this is the vision, I believe that there are several ministers and stakeholders that are involved and that at the end of the day, for us as a SADC parliamentary forum, we can only ask questions where member states should explain when is this domestication of this good idea happening?
Yeah.
Where could be the delays? What do we need to do to enforce this agreed, you know, vision? And the slow pace of economic integration, is it desirable? Those are questions of oversight that the members could ask. And that is why we really are looking forward to this parliament, because the reasons for having such a regional parliament will deal with some of these issues of slow domestication on agreed visions and protocols. And it would assist in accounting to our own parliament to ensure that the required traction is happening, and we can proceed with incorporation of some of these agreements.
Before I let you go, if I were to ask your view on political cooperation in the region, how would you say you assess it? I know you work with parliamentarians there, so you've got quite a good view of whether, you know, people are working together or there are certain tensions which might be in one way or the other stalling progress in some of these agenda items that we have spoken about that are so critical to the life of the region. Without making you a politician.
You're asking my personal view, right?
Your personal view, absolutely. Nothing to do with your office.
Yeah. No, working with Parliament and having seen what comes out with all these successive years that I've been at the forum.
Yes.
You know, the tension that the citizens see is not necessarily what is actually playing out in Parliament.
Yeah.
You know, you go into Parliament because you're in the ruling party and you have to defend the policies and decisions of the government of the day. You come into Parliament from the opposition and you have to be able to stand your ground and take them as far as possible into achieving something that is set out. And you want the gold standard at any cost. So in the battle of the titans in terms of clarifying what could be done now and later, those who are the driving seat may have a different view, while others who are on the strategic platform and are ready to say, this is what could be required and this is what should be done, are also ready. And we also find this, as parliamentary staff, as a necessary tension.
What
builds our institutions.
The constructive tension. Secretary General, I'm out of time, but thank you so much for making time for us here on Power Talk this morning. That is Secretary General for SADC Parliamentary Forum, taking us into their world of work, Buemo Sekgoma.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.